I've served on the board of the Howard County Sheltered Workshop Services for 3 years now. We board members oversee funds from Howard County property tax designated for sheltered workshop on the tax form. We pay, personally, about $3,000 a year in property tax, and of that, a little over $30 goes to the sheltered workshop designation. Howard County voted for that appropriation to be made in the early 1980s. Since we do not have a sheltered workshop that employs disabled Howard Countyans, what is that money used for, and what's going on in Howard County as we serve our disabled population? I'm talking with Tina Rice, who is the director of our HCSWS. So, yeah, let's get to talking. Okay, Tina, I'm thinking you said once that 1 out of 10 people have some kind of a disability. Did I get that wrong, saying that?
When it comes to schools, they keep closer tabs on that. And typically about 10% would be high, but 10% is typically what they see when it comes to the number of students who might qualify for special services of some kind in the school district. Of course, there's schools that there's a lower percentage of that as well, but that's usually the target that most schools go by.
Mm-hmm. And certainly a huge variation in severity and types of disability.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I have a question that I think maybe you can help me with, just talking about the layers of service in the county.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's group homes where residents live together in a large house.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be proper to call that a group home?
It is. It's an old term, but that particular term still applies to this day to describe a congregate living situation. However, it's not as large as like a nursing home or anything like that. Group homes are intended to be for a maximum of 8 individuals that would be living in the home and sharing a staff person that can assist those 8 people, and usually 2 staff during the day and 1 at night. But people that live in a group home can be very active and do other things in the community. That's just kind of a description on where they reside and what their living situation would be.
And you would you say that 8 is the maximum allowed for what we would call a group home?
Yes, yes.
How many homes like that would be there in Howard County?
So it's interesting because the group homes that we have in Howard County have actually been here for decades, and they've had different owners and they've gone by different names, but the most prevalent ones that people may still be familiar with and their current owners would be Pierce Hall. Mary Jane has had a group home in Armstrong for a long time, and that group home is still there. It is called the Pierce Home. We also have Perkins Home on South Main Street. Linda Holzclaw and owns that, and Jamie Will Hoyt manages that, and that is a group home situation. As long with Sue Braun, she also has a group home on South Main called the Braun Home. Many may remember it used to be called the Phillips Home years and years and years ago. But those are the 3 main group homes that we have in our county, which is a large number for a county our size. That's not the only kind of residential services, but those are our group homes that we have here.
Is there still one maybe called Maple Home?
You know, there used to be Maple Lawn, and it was out in the country.
Right.
Actually, Sue Braun owned that. Historically, I think that started out, again, a long time ago as maybe the county work farm. Later turned into a group home. And so there were individuals living there. And Sue has recently, within the last 5 years, closed that.
Okay.
So I believe the structure's still there, but as far as I know, it's empty.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a interesting building, beautiful house.
Mm-hmm.
I was just curious whether it was still functioning or not. And then there's another layer in which would be private homes, maybe holding 1 or 2 or three or how many individuals, what would you not call those?
That's right. And actually, it is a much more independent way for people to live. Mm-hmm. It's called individualized supported living. That's what the service is called. And so if someone provides that service, for instance, we have Braun Agency that provides that service. Endless Options provides that service. Perkins Home provides that service, as well as a group home. So individualized supported living is different in the aspect that there's a house in town, and there may be people live as housemates, just like, you know, other people would live that are single and looking to split rent. And so those individuals that live in the home, they cover their own bills. The service, the individualized supported living service, is that a staff can come to their home and assist those folks living in that home in however they individually need that. Mm-hmm. And so some may have time where it's free time, they don't need any support, they're there. Other times there may be someone that's coming in to assist all three. And those folks are still active in the community when they're not at home. So that's a much more independent way to live. And it's great for folks who also, you know, there's not a lot of intense health needs maybe that they have where they would need closer supervision. So they love that. They love the independence of it and still get the support that they need to be successful in the community as well.
Sounds like there's a big variety in just what goes on in homes like that as to what care they need, or are any of them able to drive their own vehicles in that situation?
We do have people in our community with mild intellectual disabilities that are able to and have a driver's license. And that if someone is needing a guardian to assist them in making decisions, by law, they are not allowed to have a driver's license. So that's kind of a factor for some people. But yes, we do serve people who are able to have their own vehicle and drive.
I heard once that there were about 40 homes in Fayette alone that would be considered these independent living situations. Is that at all close to the right number?
You know, I haven't done a recent count, and so I couldn't give you the exact number that we have right now. Mm-hmm. But we have probably 50 individuals who live in their own home in the community, and they may, again, have housemates, two or three. Mm-hmm. So if you factor in what that number might be, again, we have some folks where there's one person living there and some where there's three. Mm-hmm. Typically, individualized supported living services, and most homes don't have more than three bedrooms. Mm-hmm. So that's usually the maximum amount. So probably upwards of 30. Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yeah. Is there a designated nurse, a registered nurse, who kind of oversees what's going on in both the group homes and the individualized living?
That's an excellent question. So when a service provider is providing, they say that, you know, we have a group home, we also provide individualized supported living services, and we link our citizens that need that service with those providers, then they're contracting for those services. And one of the things that's required by any provider providing any type of residential service, whether it be individualized supported living, which is called ISLs for short sometimes, or group home, is that not only are they overseeing the health and well-being and safety and daily living of those individuals, but they're also providing a community RN that oversees the medical care, making sure those folks are making it to their doctor's appointments on time, that if there are health issues, that community nurse that's hired by that company also checks to, you know, make sure that whatever the doctor is recommending is followed through on, the medications are being administered properly, with oversight for folks so that they're getting proper medications when they're needed. So there is a required community RN that the agency has to provide to people in that residential service.
The financial side of this, is it folks who have a disability and are in group homes or in the independent living situation, are they just termed, you might say, disabled and get a standard disability payment every month?
So for each person, it's different. Right. Sometimes it's tied to a diagnosis that someone has as to what kind of assistance, public assistance or otherwise, that they may be qualifying for. The majority of people we serve in amongst themselves mostly qualify for MoHealthNet services for their health care. Okay. So state plan services, mm-hmm. not individual insurance, but MoHealth care.
Okay.
And so that helps to assist them with their medical insurance. Mm-hmm. We do have, of course, a large population of people we serve with intellectual disabilities that do also qualify for Social Security. Mm-hmm. And so while many work, and we do support many people to be employed and work, that Social Security income for their disability that they receive each month assists them in paying their rent, their utilities, their food. That's all their responsibility, just like it would be for you or I, Sam. So the residential service just provides the oversight so that they're safe in their living environment, and that's a separate funding source. So, and we can certainly go into that if you want to, too.
In the public schools, how are folks with disabilities served?
Excellent question again. And DESE does a lot to support infants through the time they graduate high school with children and families who may have a child that requires, has differing abilities and requires different kinds of supports. They have First Steps, which intervenes, you know, very early on at birth. If the family would like to have First Steps come in and kind of assist with what can help this child get the best jump start to overcome some of the challenges that they're seeing. At age 3, then, the referral is made to the preschool step of public education, and the school works with the family then as well. The school system is required to help a student meet the educational needs to help them as much as possible to identify what they need and to provide that support. That doesn't carry over into the home, what kinds of things may be needed in the home, whether the child may have autism, some type of intellectual disability. This public school system is not going to assist with that in the home, but they certainly will assist with those needs in the school system, whether it's speech therapy, whether it's some type of physical therapy, whether there's additional learning support that's needed, assistive technology that can help that student. But again, that resource stops at the end of the school day. And so we do find sometimes with particularly the tax levy, I mean, that's what those funds are there for, is to meet any individual or nonprofit organizational needs to support people with disabilities in our community. So our board certainly can look at what are the needs of those kiddos at the end of the school day and the needs of the family in the home, whether there's some physical equipment that's needed, whether, maybe there's some behavioral supports in the home that may be needed. So absolutely the public school system does a lot. But again, that ends at the school day.
I have a grandson who's very disabled, and the family has moved from North Dakota to another state, and they were just amazed at the differences in services from state to state. How do you feel about Missouri's system of support?
I cross the statistics a lot for a lot of different categories of data that's collected for services to people with disabilities nationwide. Mm-hmm. I don't have those in front of me to quote numbers, but I do know that consistently Missouri is very well known for being in the forefront of many services and supports to people with disabilities that aren't in other states, and ask Missouri, how are you doing that? And I'll tell you, Sam, one of them is the SB 40 legislation to have a tax collection and an overseeing citizen board. By having that, and by Missouri having passed that, back in, working on that in the late 70s with deinstitutionalization, and then Howard County passing that in 1984, those, to this day, those opportunities are not in other states. Mm-hmm. By Missouri making that progress for people, and Missouri taxpayers in, I believe the number is 88 counties now in Missouri, have an SB 40 tax levy board and collect that SB 40 tax levy. Not only does it free up money locally to support people, but it allows us to, number one, contract for service coordination services to assist families locally and have that at a local level so we can help connect people to the resources, families, to resources where they live. And none of that is possible without the SB 40 legislation. So if a state doesn't have that, they have to figure out some other kind of system for setting up those local services. If they're done at the state level, then the wait lists are horrendously long for most services somebody would need. And also, because we have the SB 40 board here locally, Missouri has a very unique opportunity for funding, especially for families where just a few things are needed, and that's called the Partnership for Hope. And it allows families to not have to sit on a long wait list. If they have minimal need, those can be addressed right away. And other states in the United States, we hear this all the time in Missouri. They're like, what is this Partnership for Hope thing, and how do you do that? And it's nowhere else. It's a Missouri thing. Wow. And it is 20%. If someone needs $100 worth of services, if our local tax levy board is willing to pay 20 cents of that, the state of Missouri says we'll match 20%. Hmm. And the federal government says we'll match 60%.
Wow.
So with 20 cents, we can bring this family a dollar's worth of services. Hmm. That, and that's not anywhere else in the United States.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of unique things happening in Missouri. Also, employment services for people with developmental disabilities. Missouri ranks very high on making that a priority over some other states. And so people can be employed and be self-sufficient as much as possible as well. And so we also, our technology, our assistive technology, Missouri has really made that a priority to help support people to be as independent as possible. So maybe that's having some electronics or some oversight in the home so that no one has to be in the home with that individual. And they've really made that a priority of more so than many other states. So it makes me proud to do this in Missouri. And also, I mean, I think about that every day when it comes to just Howard County. You know, this is where I've lived and lived most of my life and was born and raised here. And I'm happy to try to make this a place where families don't have to move away. Little old Howard County, you know, that we can have some things here that may not be in the state of South Dakota. You know, just here, families don't have to move. And I'm always open, and I know our board is always open, to, you know, what are the needs? What are the needs that maybe people are coming to us for, and how can we address that? Let's be creative and think about how to do that. And I think Howard County's been doing that all along. You know, Howard County brought the SB 40 board into existence here and said, we want to make this a priority. We'll take a tax collection and collect a levy to meet the needs of people with intellectual disabilities because we want to be a place where they can live. And so I think Howard County's always been open to that for decades. We have some counties surrounding us that SB 40 legislation was, and the levy was collected, you know, maybe 8 years ago. They just started doing it, and they're bigger than us, and their populations are bigger than us, but their families were moving away to other places. So it's a good place to be.
I looked on my tax papers, and I didn't do a real thorough accounting, but it kind of looked like we pay about $3,000 in property tax, and our family contributes, I think, about $30 a year to the sheltered workshop funding in there. Well, $30 times 4,000 households in Howard County, that puts us at 120,000. And I think that actually the number is bigger than that.
And you know, it's gradually kind of gone up over the last few years consistently. When I came in 2017, it was about 120. We're at about 140,000 a year right now.
Yeah.
We are at the rate that we are assessed at, this levy is assessed at, is a 0.1 per 100 assessed valuation. So that equals about $140,000 a year. Yeah.
Wow, my figuring was pretty close.
You were great. Yes, you were. Good math on the fly.
Just by looking at one piece of my tax.
That's right. That's right.
So what we call our group is the Howard County Shelter Workshop Service.
Well, it's transformed over the years. So when Howard County first adopted the SB 40 legislation and tax collection, one of the requirements of the legislation is that there be a 9-person county board of citizens that oversee the disbursement of that. And so when that board first formed, they called themselves the Missouri Association of the Handicapped. And that, again, was in 1984. The enabling legislation at that time, there weren't very many services in the community, in most communities in Missouri. Those first services tended to be what were called sheltered workshops. Mm-hmm. So some of the initial wording was geared towards making sure that there was a service there in the county for people to be able to live and work and function in the community, and typically those were sheltered workshops. There aren't as many sheltered workshops as there used to be, since, you know, services have grown and types of services available, the funding for different kinds of services, the needs have changed, the ages have changed. Now we can, again, assist families from birth to, it's a lifelong opportunity for services. So the sheltered workshop, Howard County never had a sheltered workshop as such. We started out with a day program and residential services back in the 80s. I worked at those. And so some of the wording relates to sheltered workshop. But that's just kind of old wording. Now it's for whatever services are available that this can help fund that. There was a time where the name changed to Howard County Sheltered Services Board. That word shelter kind of came from the sheltered workshop concept. It's not been changed since. Today it's the Howard County Sheltered Services Board. Some people don't even know what sheltered means, and it is a bit confusing. So it's really the Howard County Disability Services Board is really one way to think about that. And probably we need to at some point think about making another name change that might be more in tune with what families understand it to be. Because sheltered people are just kind of
like, it works.
For now it works, yes. Yes.
So there's this board of 9 people.
Yes.
And then where do we really fit in to this overview view we've just taken of how we serve folks in our community?
So the way it works with board members who are interested, again, they're citizens of the county, so that could be maybe people from Glasgow. I try to make sure we have a variety when trying to attract members, if we need a member on the board. New Franklin, Glasgow, all the rural areas in between, Fayette. So it should be a nice snapshot of as many citizens from different areas of the county that we can have. Also, the requirement in the legislation is that there be 9, and that a minimum of 2 have a direct impact in their life, have a family member within, you know, close proximity of, whether they're, you know, a parent, whether they're a grandparent, or have a family member that they understand has a developmental disability, to be on the board. It's a requirement that a minimum of 2. And that's really to bring that lived experience to the table. Right now, we have probably 4 board members on our current board that have a family member that have some type of developmental disability or intellectual disability. So that's a really important perspective to bring. They know what it feels like to be that family member and what that struggle can look like sometimes if the resources that you need aren't there or that you can't afford them. And so that's really important as well. The term for board members is 3 years. I usually try to find interested citizens, and then once we have someone who's interested, there's some paperwork to fill out, and then that information goes to the Howard County Commission, and they do the formal appointment of an interested citizen to be on the board. Since I've been here in 2017, we've had a little bit of turnover on the board. You know, it is a long commitment. We meet once a month. But I can say every single member that we've ever had on the board has been open, very open to what the needs of the community are and how we can use those levy funds responsibly, but also to meet the need that is here for people so they don't have to move away. I've had great experience with all board members.
Now, we as board members hire you, and then we also have what's called service coordinators.
Yes.
And how do we, what is their purpose? What do they do?
You know, the Howard County Sheltered Services Board, and I know some people kind of get, you know, it is a confusing setup sometimes if you're not aware. So I'm really glad to be able to talk about this. The Howard County Sheltered Services Board oversees two things. That levy that we've been talking about and the
right.
disbursement of that levy. And again, this is a Missouri thing. Because we have an SB 40 board in Howard County, the state of Missouri, Division of Developmental Disabilities, probably a decade and a half ago, approached local SB 40 boards and said, the state can't continue to do service coordination. It's too costly for us. We have to drive too far. Families can't meet with us. We're too far away. If you would like to have service coordination locally, an office where service coordinators can assist people and link them to what they need in that community, then you can, SB 40 board, but we need to do a contract, and then you need to understand you have to oversee that service. So Howard County, some counties said, we just can't do that. We don't want to get into that. We don't, it's complicated, and we don't have time. We're volunteers. And some counties said, yes, we want that locally. And so then Howard County made the determination at one point that we can't do this. We're working, we have jobs, we have families of our own, but we'll hire a company to do it for us. And so Howard County kind of went through that for a while. Medicaid made some changes to that, and they told Missouri that. So Missouri said, okay, we have to be more careful about how boards are doing this. It really can't be another agency if that agency is also providing the services, because then who's determining there might be a conflict?
Right.
So, again, there had to be conflict-free to that. So Howard County made the step of saying, then we are going to hire someone. We're going to hire an executive director. And we're going to oversee this executive director and know what's happening.
Which is you.
Which is me.
Right.
It is me. And they're going to take care of the hiring and the day-to-day, and they're going to report to us. They're going to be audited when the county gets audited, so we need this person to oversee the finances. We need someone to make sure that the laws are being followed, whether it's federal, state, or local. The changes in what services should be, what is service coordination, make sure that they're, you know, training people properly and meeting the needs of the families. And so that's the role I have. And we do currently have 5 service coordinators to assist people with disabilities in our county. They have a supervisor. Her name is Tristy Ginter, and she is the director of service coordination. They're busy with that constantly. So, and then I assist in that role as needed. I've been a service coordinator before. I've actually been in the field of developmental disabilities in multiple ways for about 40 years. And so I can assist with that and also make sure that the business is running properly and the laws are being followed, which change constantly. The requirements from Medicaid and the Division of Developmental Disabilities and the Department of Mental Health and DHSS, and there's just so many laws we have to follow, and that we're following our contract, and we're overseeing the services that are being provided to people. So it's not just linking them to those, but we have to go out there and then oversee it, watch it happen. We go to people's homes, their workplaces, if they go to a day program, just to make sure they're getting the service that everybody's paying for in the way that it should be and that they're making progress. So it's a lot, and hopefully it's running smooth for everybody. I think that we've had numerous state audits, Medicaid audits, licensing, you know, all those requirements, so that have done very well with that.
The service coordinators, how does a disabled person get plugged into a service coordinator?
Excellent question. So if someone in our county feels like, oh, I think my daughter, or I think this might help my cousin who, you know, mm-hmm. or my own family member, or myself, mm-hmm. all they have to do is call our office.
Okay.
And our number is 660-248-5105. They can specifically put in extension number 113, and that'll come straight to my desk, so I can make sure they get pointed in the right direction. But yes, it starts here. There is some, for us to be able to assist with services and getting people linked to those services and to have the proper funding for those services, it is a formal process that they have to go through. And part of that process has to be done at the regional level at the office in Columbia, submitting things to them. Mm-hmm. The actual, what's called the intake process of someone being able to receive Division of Developmental Disability Services, they have a part in that intake. And they're also the ones that we ask when it comes to funding. So some of it needs to be done through there, and we can certainly assist that. Once they've established that, yes, this person qualifies, then that person gets turned over to us mm-hmm. for then on.
And about how many individuals are service coordinators helping now or at any one time?
So right now in Howard County, we have about 120 people that receive formal services. Mm-hmm. We know that there's some kiddos in the school district that likely as they enter adulthood, they may not need things at home right now, and the school system may be supporting what they need in their learning mm-hmm. environment. But as they start to get older and have to think about adulting, you know, getting a job and, you know, mm-hmm. not necessarily maybe living at home their whole life with mom and dad, and they want to live as independently as possible, that's when we start to see some of those kiddos as they come out of school. Certainly we support children and family while they're in school. We have some that we do. So all ages, but overall, we are linking about 120 people right now to services in that.
Now, do they come to you on a regular basis, or you go to them, or both?
Both.
Okay.
We have a meeting happening right in our office right now, fairly large meeting down the hallway. We also can go to folks' homes, and we just go to oversee how things are going. Mm-hmm. Finding out what they need, first of all, and then they will have a service coordinator that will then follow along and meet with them as often as needed and find out, did we link you to what you need? Is there something else that you need? Is this service that you needed not happening like you thought it was going to? Did they say they were going to provide this service and they're not showing up? Or, you know, is there a problem somewhere? Or is it not what you thought? Is it not actually meeting your need? And so we're changing those kinds of things all the time and honing in on what someone needs. And as someone grows, you know, through our life, what we need changes. And so it's also, you know, helping to make sure that we're linking them to right. adult resources when they become adults.
Now, the $130,000 or $140,000 that comes in from property tax cannot possibly fund all that.
Right.
So where does the funding come from?
Yes. For people who qualify for Medicaid, mm-hmm. if they qualify for Medicaid, Medicaid will cover certain services, but not really a lot of what someone with an intellectual disability would need. It covers health stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. And so
right.
those other things that people that need, Medicaid has certain things they'll say, okay, we understand your need, so we're going to waive the restrictions and we're going to cover this and this for you. And those are called Medicaid waivers, and there's kind of a catalog of those. And so depending on what someone needs, how much they need, sometimes they may qualify, if they qualify for Medicaid, to receive a waiver. And so that helps fund state funding matched with federal funding to meet those needs.
Right.
if someone doesn't qualify for Medicaid, there's nothing really there to assist with those extra needs beyond health. So those really are where, because we do have the SB 40 board in Howard County that collects that tax levy, that money can be dispersed to the needs of the community for people with intellectual disabilities. And it is intended to be a funder of last resort. Everything else has to be, you know, checked first. But if there's this real need and someone doesn't have the funding for the service, the equipment, the support that they need, the levy can fund that. And it can be to individuals. And it can also be to better those services in our community for organizations that serve people with intellectual disabilities that are not for profit. We can't take that tax levy money and support for-profit businesses, you know, but we can certainly assist with not-for-profit organizations. So we do both here in Howard County. We don't know what the needs are going to be for individuals in our county on a given year, but we can kind of try to guess. So we try to, and we don't know what the needs of some of the organizations will be or the community projects that are geared toward people with disabilities. We may not always know what those are going to be. So it's really hard to determine those in advance. We do have a zero balance budget every year, and we focus on what are the needs of the individuals in our community. Because they don't have any funding if they're coming to the board. They have nothing to help pay for this service. And so I prefer to make that tax levy budget based upon what are the needs of the individuals and families. And then when we have things left over at the end of the year, I call that our unexpended funds grant cycle. That's our opportunity to go out into the community and try to support with environmental accessibility, with different kinds of services that may be out there where the community is getting involved in providing services to people with intellectual disabilities. So we're able to do both. It's hard for me to say in a budget, well, let's guess that this organization needs something and let's guess on what they, I mean, we don't know that. So the challenge sometimes is trying to, you know, peer into the future too. But we focus on the individual needs and because we know we have those commitments. And then at the end of the year is the opportunity for us to say, okay, we have this much left over, now we can open that up to the community.
Can you give an idea of what sort of services the funding is going towards?
Absolutely.
That are not covered by other funding?
Yes. And we have a list of vendors, at least since 2017, of businesses that we have a business associate agreement with, and that we've done some vetting. We've looked at their responsibility and their liability and making sure that they're a, you know, solid business that we're agreeing to fund services through. And so there's a process we go through. I call a business associate agreement. We do deal with HIPAA and health information and all that needs to be protected. So once we've received that information and we've kind of vetted that and looked through it, then we can start connecting people to that resource. And those are things that, gosh, there's such a variety. We have folks that there are medical needs that they may have that traditionally are not covered by insurance or Medicaid or MoHealthNet or anyone else. Dental's an issue. It used to be a bigger issue than it is now. Medicaid's doing a better job, MoHealthNet, of covering some of those things. But dental issues are huge for people. And that can tie into anything to increasing frustration and aggressive, you know, behavior. Right. If you have trouble verbalizing what's wrong and you're in pain, and we've had those situations before. So some dental definitely occurs. Also, we have a lot of people we serve in our county that have kind of what's considered formally to be two diagnoses. It may be a developmental disability, also coupled with a mental health disorder. And so now there's some other things involved. And because they are dually diagnosed, it is kind of the formal word for that. They don't always fit this over here, and they don't always fit this over here. And sometimes aggression and things like that are a factor. They're frustrated. And so behavioral services are something that's really important, and families would say that as well for their children in certain circumstances. And we don't have those services available to us. And throughout Missouri, there's very few providers of those services. So we have found, and we've explored with the board and some of the other things we have now started funding, is how can we assist with that? And so personal counseling has made a huge difference. Again, it's counseling companies that can meet the business associate agreement that we have. And so we've been able to do that and expand upon that, and it has made a huge difference in the people we serve. So counseling is one. Also therapies, there's a couple of therapies that are found to be very beneficial, and they're not considered to be covered again by MoHealthNet or Medicaid or traditional insurance. And it's everything from equine therapy, which has a lot of benefits, to social therapy, and that may again be through their counseling, also maybe through going to a day program during the day and being involved in that. They may not have Medicaid, so that's not covered any other way. So they ask the board to assist in funding that. So day programs, employment services, transportation is a big one. Whether it be, again, therapies. Also, there's a service called personal assistance, and that's where someone may need some assistance in the home to learn how to do something. They don't live in the residential services we were talking about earlier. They don't live in a group home. They don't live in individualized supported living. They're trying to live at home alone, or they're living with family or a grandparent. And so a personal assistant can come into the home and help teach those skills so they can be more independent in what we call their natural home. So maybe later they won't need to go to a group home or need individualized supported living. They've learning what they are learning with their families to help to support them. So that's another important service that's provided. Medical equipment that's not provided by any other funding source, that's another big one. Sometimes pharmaceuticals that are needed and necessary, but for whatever reason aren't funded through insurance. We also have, I'm kind of looking over a list that I had in front of me, a lot of medical. And again, some of those services that I was referring to before.
We have covered a lot of ground.
We have, Sam.
Let me ask this. Do you see some changes coming at us that are going to be good or bad? Some challenges that are in the back of your mind that...
Well, you know, costs are always a challenge. Costs are a challenge to those of us who have regular, private insurance. It's also a challenge to those who may be reliant on MoHealthNet. It's also a challenge in the rising costs of everything. And so I think our challenge for the future is going to be, we do need to manage care. We do need to do that and be good stewards of tax dollars. And so I think that Missouri has looked many times at Missouri managed care, which MoHealthNet is one, it is managed care. But they're trying to figure out how to make long-term services and supports fit the traditional managed care model. And there's a lot of exploring they're doing on how to do that. So I think in the future, we're going to see a need to try to figure that out. But at the same time, we don't want people dying. We don't want people to get hurt. We want people to be productive. The needs are going to be long term, but how can we do that and sustain those needs financially? And they've attempted Missouri managed care before at the detriment of families, at the detriment of people served. There have been deaths due to that. And so it's not like a cap that you can put on treatment for heart disease. And, we see people die from that too. That insurance didn't cover things that were necessary. So the challenge, I think, is going to be one that we face, all of us face, but we have a particular population of people that are very vulnerable, and their health risks are vulnerable. These are the people that we serve. And so how do we also make sure that their long-term services and supports are done in a way that's affordable without risk to, you know, to someone being harmed or worse.
Yeah. We have a saying on our farm that I kind of see through all of Howard County, and I see that in the services that are provided for disabled folks. And that saying is this: we've done so much with so little for so long. Now us damn fools think we can do almost anything with nothing.
Oh, that's just perfect.
So I'm optimistic about the future of care in this county.
I am too. It's been progressive and looking to the future all along, and we'll continue to do that, and how to do it in the most responsible way for everybody.
Well, thank you, Tina. This has been a very rewarding time.
Yes, I appreciate it. Okay. Thank you.